Hey, Mark.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, you want to do a podcast?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. Welcome to the Unforget Yourself show, where we use the power of woo and the proof of science to help you identify your blind spots, get over your own bullshit, so that you can do the fucking thing you actually want to do.
Absolutely. I'm Mark.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the founders of Unforget Yourself and the creators of the Unforget Yourself system. Look, being a business owner is tough.
Yeah.
With vulnerability and with humor, mm-hmm. we'll be sharing with you the real stories behind the success of those brave and crazy enough to start their own business. And to show you that you're not alone.
You're not. Well, from the accidental entrepreneur to the laser-focused CEO, we have honest conversations about how they got to where they are today. We talk about the challenges that they faced and what they're currently dealing with in real time on their roller coaster journey. Along the way, we want to show you that it's you. You are the most important asset in your business.
Yeah, you are. So let's cut the bullshit and start the show.
Enjoy. Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, we have Jerry Dove with us. Jerry is a 20-year certified financial planner. He has a couple of kids. He's a sports enthusiast, and he's an all-around pretty funny fucking human being. So welcome, Jerry. We're glad you're here today with us.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be joining you.
Great. Hey, so to begin, could you please, just for the benefit of the listeners, tell us a bit about what you do? And I know that it is not typical. Like, it's not a typical, I'm going to say this wrong, so correct me as you explain this, but book a business.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do that for you. Originally, I started in the same, I guess, realm of most financial planners, picking up assets and looking after clients' needs. And about 10 years ago, or halfway through my career, I started to wonder if there was a better way to do this. And I happen to be a pretty substantial Elon Musk fan, but I'll get to that in a minute. And was looking to shift the dynamics of the business and how you approach really your day-to-day activity, more importantly, clarifying what it is you do for the end user. It's not like you're selling products or fulfilling a need, other than the fact that I quickly transitioned into a social worker for the affluent, and that's my job.
Ooh, can you dig into that more? I want to hear more about social worker for the affluent.
Yes, no problem. A couple of things I kind of discovered that is common among affluent individuals. They usually are a first generation business owner that's made some kind of a passion they had, whether it was, you know, making car parts in their garage or negotiating shoe contracts overseas for production, or even just being a mid to upper level production manager in some kind of a facility. They all have similar, I guess you'd say, traits. Mm-hmm. And the three that I would highlight first would be they're alone a lot. So they'll have a social network, they'll have friends, they'll even have a spouse. But oftentimes there's so much going on in the business that they work in. If that spouse isn't involved in the business in a day-to-day operation, they respectfully keep some of that information to themselves, because at least from my client's perspective, it comes down to the fact that they don't want to burden or stress them with their daily stresses, because that passion has become something beyond their wildest dreams in terms of the business entity they've created. So the first one is they are alone a lot. So I get a lot of phone calls off hours about, it could be anything from kids hockey to what's happening with the markets, right?
Yeah. Mm.
I also realize that people that are in that demographic operating are very sensitive to what's going on in the world. So they're very attuned to, I'll give you three topics today, for example. It's it would be obviously the COVID rebound here, what's happening in various industries, at least in Canada here, a huge one is interest rates, what's happening with things that are out there. And then also, as that spins off, I'll give you one more example, and that would be interest rates and how they play out with things like housing and inflation and so on. I have a Bachelor of Commerce degree, mm-hmm. and did further that to my CFP. So I am knowledgeable enough that they to really translate today's headlines into pieces of value by kind of distilling down what that means to that individual. Could be nothing, could be quite significant, could be something for the future they need to concern themselves with more than today. So those are three features of kind of the people that I enjoy working with the most.
Nice. So it's funny when you talk about the affluent individuals in this way as a sort of separate description, meaning that I think people don't humanize those of affluence so much so. And your ability to do that, I think, must lend itself to your success with that. So what do you have any false beliefs around working with the affluent that you would like to squash?
Certainly. When I started in the business, I came from a very small town, didn't know a lot of people, and there was some rumors about who had some cash in town or who was well off in town. And I don't like rumors. In fact, I often try to dig until I know that I can either prove them accurate or inaccurate. So I started to research a little bit. My brain is definitely a research-based brain. So I read a handful of books. I can't remember the author right now. I can certainly look it up for you. But the three books that I read is something called The Millionaire Next Door. The Millionaire Mind was the most valuable one. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was, I read The Wealthy Barber. It was okay. But there's one more millionaire book in that series. I'm sorry, the title isn't coming to me at the moment. But basically, the myths are not what you think in terms of, like, today we have much more social media than we did when I was starting out in the business. And really anyone who promotes himself as an outspoken affluent person, I don't have the time for them, because the myths that I would like to step on is that the only way to become affluent is keep your expenses much lower than your income, and the bigger that spread, the more money you accumulate over time, especially when I kind of focus on that first generation. So at the end of the day, they want to pay less taxes, educate their kids, and pay off their house as fast as anybody else. And then, as I'm not sure if I mentioned, paying in our country, Canada, we have some very high taxation rates. So corporately, there's some planning you can do around that to do that. But the key of those individuals is definitely they're exceptional at one thing. And that thing might be, it's usually very obscure. Like, money is not made, you know, well, you can see it now. It's evident. An extreme example is people invested too heavily in cryptocurrencies, where it's come across that it just isn't there. And so the reality is, you know, money is made when you can add passion, right, to your time and turn that into a monetary value. Right. Mm-hmm. And that passion, it's almost like the more obscure that passion is, someone who owns five nursing homes, someone who owns a business that no one would ever think of. And I was fortunate. I come from a couple of family lineages that were involved either in farming or in kind of a technology business. My grandfather started buying and selling televisions in the early 50s when they really took off. So I was always fascinated by technology, and he kind of got me going on that. And then, but they have to have a nose for the bottom line at all times. So I hope that quashes it. You'd be amazed at who lives in your neighborhood, and it's not who you think typically with a, because you got to remember, I work with investable assets, not cars and toys and junk, right? So anything from, and Warren Buffett is the ultimate example. So obviously Warren is not a client of mine, but he's from his, the way he buys cars, houses, it's all habitually based. So that's how you kind of separate that. And that's important to be able to say no sometimes in business. That's how you separate your ideal versus your somebody else's ideal client they're welcome to have, because you simply don't want them. So,
right.
Yeah. So what lit you up about investing? What is it that you really, really enjoyed that kept you going for so many years?
It's incredibly simple, Mark. Thanks for asking. My family's been farmers for a number of generations. My dad has a farm. Actually, my brother's been buying them. He's got a couple. I was with him yesterday. But my grandfather sold his farm and he passed away. He had a stroke and they had to get rid of the farm. So he moved into town and they sold the farm, invested the money. And at that time, he was an immigrant from England, and which is nothing wrong with that, obviously. But he came and made his, he worked hard here, and his brother came over in, I don't want to say the 20s. Anyway, maybe the 30s, but they started farming, and or he did anyway. And they sold his farm, so they had a lump sum of money, and that money went into just a GIC-based investment. So when I was about 15, I think, GICs, of course, when he did very well with them because of his timing, there was very high interest rates and you could make money without even trying. But I always was fascinated by business or company ownership. What I mean by that is, obviously, you can buy stocks in companies and own the companies that way. So just for fun, when I was young, two things I did that were incredibly valuable. When I was young, I read one of those books that I was speaking about called The Wealthy Barber. It talked about, you know, dividends and growth and ownership versus loanership, which is basically giving money to a bank and they can then lend it out and make money at it. But they're making a spread and you're the guy losing. So I think my dad is a local bank, and like one of these individuals, he was dressed in some probably worn clothing, and I didn't recognize it at the time, but he said, yeah, no, I got to go to the bank. I said, well, let's go. And I got to give him credit. I was 15 and he didn't give me carte blanche, but he certainly, like the lady at the bank, her head was kind of spinning because I'm like, okay, we want to do this, this, and this, and here's our percentages. And she was kind of like, who is this? Because I wasn't driving yet, right?
Yeah.
But I got interested in it. Anyway, I went back early on in my career and I said, okay, if we had taken Grandpa's farm proceeds, and rather than buying GICs or giving that money to a bank to make some money on and they lend it back out, what if we just bought bank shares, like actually purchased those shares? And I think it went something to the tune of, you know, if we'd done it the way he did it, and it's his money and it's not that a judgment, but if we'd done it on the ownership front, where we bought some stocks, even of blue chip companies like banks and the utilities and very basic businesses that he made use of, my parents made use of, and now I make use of, what would that look like? And I think the number was roughly 5 times the amount of money. Wow. So over a 30-year period, I've become very attuned to the fact that money is not money, time is money. And so I don't think people maybe understand that as prevalently as they could. But that's how I really got more passionate about it myself, was understanding I'm a farmer and I have owned a farm and worked on a farm for a couple of years. And farming is about growth. It's a real simple business. You take one seed and you make 100. It's not hard. There's a lot of work and labor, but that's the deal. So that's how it turned into something that I was passionate enough about to blow by or adjust the way I was doing things and doing things to help the end user. So it's morphed a couple of times, but that's really where it started.
Nice. I love that. Everyone has their sort of origin story of one thing, a catalyst that's
changed everything.
Changed everything.
Well, I'm just so interested in this idea of the correlation between being a farmer and being an investor. And you had mentioned the difference in actually being really affluent lies within your habits. And as a farmer, you have to develop certainly daily habits that you can't sway from. And so as an investor, is that essentially what you're getting to? Is that the same thing? In order to make $1 that you plant into the ground grow into your money tree, essentially?
Yeah, in fact, I'll take it one level higher. Katie, when it came time for me to decide on a career, I did a sales job originally for about 18 months, and I really didn't like it, I'll be honest with you. It was in the ag business. But prior to that, I worked in some farming businesses, and I was, you know, and even today, it's, you know, I actually went out to Western Canada, and I worked on something called a harvest cruise. So basically you purchase these machines. At the time they were about 250,000 Canadian and maybe 50,000 for a header. So you're about 300,000 a piece. And the fellow that I worked for, he bought six of them. We drove to Texas, did some harvesting and worked our way back up to Canada. And that's how he made his living. And the guy was great because he laid it out. He's like, he sat us down one night, the year was almost done and it's stressful for him. But once things, you know, kind of got money in the bank and settled for the year, he sat us all down. He gave us the rundown. Like we were young. I was 20 years old. And he gave us the rundown on, okay, here's what I pay for the machine. Here's what I get for it when I turn it in. And that depreciation is gone because we've used the machines, but that's how it works. And so when it came time for me to have a career like that, and now it's different. I mean, there, John Deere came up with a new combine last year. It's $1 million US just for the machine, another 300,000 for the head. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's a lot of dough. Even if I have to carry that cost, it's a lot of money. So I started to look at, Katie, a little more flexible in time. It's just, it comes back to the same thing around time. The investment of time is gigantic, right? And so when I came to this career, yes, you are right. There's definitely some similarities. However, we only have so much time. And so I felt that I could, of the time money I was investing, I could, it's not a selfish point, but I could have a different life, not a better life, a different life. And there's times when I miss it. I still go home when I can. And I didn't combine this year, but I'll go home and do it. But there's more time now for me than there ever would be if I was like, I wouldn't be sitting here today talking to you. That's for sure. I'd be in a piece of machinery or fixing something. I could still have a conversation, but right. So that what I'm getting at is, Katie, when you said that, as far as my career, I wanted that to leapfrog me forward into not a level of, by no means did I mean a level of independence from working. I wanted the independence from time commitments and responsibility. So this stuff right now you'll see, and it's, I don't want to take us on a tangent, but you'll see now there's some autonomous farm equipment coming out. Just fascinates mm-hmm. me. Because it gives the guy, the lady, or the gentleman back its time, right? Yeah. So I'm not sure if I answered your question directly, but that's my thoughts on that.
No, well, it makes me wonder, what was that transition like for you to choose a completely different career path from what your family was doing?
I'm sure they thought I was crazy, number one. Number two, I will openly admit that I struggled with moving from hands-on and physical work, which I still like. I've always either run or but farming is interesting because it's tangible mm-hmm. and you really can't get, you know, I've ridden a land bicycle 100 kilometers. So you get done your bike ride and you're like, oh, that's cool. So I have a little app on my phone that says you went 100 kilometers. But it's not like I took off 100 acres of wheat. It's not, there's not the same tangible reward. And I will be honest with you, I struggle with that. And I still to this day struggle with that terribly. So like before I came on here, I went downstairs and I worked out. Mm-hmm. Now I will say one of the things that I have been able to find is so I went out to the West, I said, came back and I had my own farm just on a joint work with a neighbor who was an elderly gentleman and he had a stroke and he couldn't do the work. So I did the work.
Yeah.
And that was good. But what I'm saying to you now is, because I had kind of overcommitted to the career, I didn't do a lot of things that a normal 20-year-old does, right? I didn't date half the world. I didn't go out and party. I was focused. I was dialed. I wanted to try this career. Mm-hmm. So I committed to it. And I never really developed a passion until now. So it's actually fascinating you asked that question the way you did, because I've always liked the sport of hockey. And to be honest with you, a fellow from my hometown is actually in the Hall of Fame. My father coached him a little bit. And so I kind of left the hockey thing when I was about 15, 16, didn't play because I thought it'd be too small. Well, now I'm 6'1", 200, I'm larger. I'm in decent shape for my age. But now it's like, what were you thinking? So I have started to kind of, I used to do a workout here before now about specific fitness and training. And because part of the fascinating conversation we're having, but as we go through it, I do want to share that now for me, I wanted to be a pro in a profession and I did it. And what's always fascinated me now about sports is the psychology of a pro versus an amateur. because it is black and white, in stone, obvious as can be.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to now find that pathway to work on that, because I certainly, Katie, as you said, as someone who totally broke the mold career-wise, right. I've done it once with something that was, I mean, I always had a fascination for math and money, and my father made me do my own tax return when I was 13. Okay. So that was a tremendous, at the time I'm like, what is going on here? But when I did it, it's paid off tremendous dividends down the road, because I understand a little bit. I'm not an accountant. It's too boring for me, accounting, but
yeah,
I still struggle with the transition of physical, physical productivity and emotional or mental based work. Right, that balance is something that I need to fulfill my career needs. It's a very good question.
Right. So is that why you find yourself leaning in more towards professional sports and hockey specifically? And because there's sort of this marriage of almost what you've developed in your career as far as these this focus and habits. And that's what, well, I'll just say hockey demands essentially in order to do well.
Great question. I'll tell you the following as briefly as I can and concisely. I always paid attention to successful people who were successful way beyond. I can't stand gossip and small talk. So when someone was in the community, being looked up to, but then also being put down because of jealousy or whatever, because they had more money or more farms or so. I have three examples that I'll tell you. One of them is this fellow in the Hall of Fame. I rode the school bus with him when I was a kid. He's about 9 years older than I am. At the time, he was 5 feet taller than I was, but I sat with him on the bus, school bus. And we're sitting there and he's like, oh yeah, Jerry, you know, we have about a 200 acre farm, my parents. And I'm like, we just talked from the school home. So 40 minutes on a bus ride. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think he made about $85 million playing hockey. The number doesn't matter, but it's like, he's just a dude. Like, he's just normal. And someone said to me when I was younger, the reason he excelled tremendously was when he hit 16, he got in front, he's big, but he got in front of the right coaching. And that took him from to planetary. I had a babysitter when I was a kid who did some, it's called sharecropping, where a larger farmer will hire out farmers to do his work for him. And they make some money, he makes some money. Babysitter said to me, Jerry, everyone hates this particular John. I won't use his last name because, but basically they said, okay, you know, everyone's jealous of him because I think he had 1,000 acres in the 80s. That was a tremendously large number. And I'm from tobacco country. So that was 1,000 acres of tobacco, which is a very lucrative crop, especially then. She said, you know, everyone says this or that about him, but they don't realize he's out working at midnight, till midnight most nights, right? In the season. And so I was like, oh yeah. So then I, as I said to you, I, oddly enough, I went through high school and I, my mother was great. She showed up at my work one day and said, oh, I need you to sign these forms. I'm like, what are you doing? She said, well, I'm applying for all these scholarships for you. And sure enough, I'll tell you, I got the John Malo scholarship for $500. So the guy gave me money down the road. Yeah. So it wasn't about the money. It's just like, wait a minute here. This is, you know, this is something else. So peak performers in whatever their role is, Katie. And that's, so I'm a golfer, not very good one, but I'm a golfer. And I never applied myself to it. I haven't got the time, but you'll notice golf is a good example, because in golf, the top 5% make all the money by far. And it wasn't for me about, it never has been about greed or wanting money. It's about the freedom that if you want to go do something, let's go do it, right? We're going around one time. I said it comes back to time. So I don't know if I addressed that question effectively, but really top performers, even my little hometown, always impressed me. So now if I go to an NHL-based hockey game, I'm looking for, you know, when you see somebody, either look in their eyes or their body language or what have you, and you see them performing at a, even kids, like my own kids, you know, or kids their age, you can really start to see, and there's nothing better for me. It's interesting you ask that. For me, it comes down to transitioning from the growth of crops or animals or what have you, Katie, to psychological development. If you can see a kid go through something challenging, or even a, you know, when you're working with people's money and they have a, I have a guy call me, he's dying of a lung cancer. He called me crying three days in a row, or within sequence, to say, you know, is my family going to be okay? Well, I know mathematically they're laughing because we've worked our butt off together on it, right? But I'm not there to tell him that. Mm. I'm there to make sure that he knows that if he wants to do something else before his time has passed, because it was terminal.
Yeah.
The last thing you need to worry about is go do it, because I'm so sensitive to time. Go do it. You've got the money. So he, I'll just give you a quick funny story. He called me. He had to get some new lungs. Calls me. Yeah, we're in the Grand Canyon. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just took a helicopter ride. So why are you calling me? Well, I decided to call you and tell you that I don't have health insurance because I couldn't get it. But we're in the Grand Canyon. Meaning he listened, right? And that was a big thing for me in my advice world. Is I was a 25-year-old kid. You have to get people to listen to you about finance or what have you. So you asked about the hockey thing. If you can get an elite player, and every player who makes any elite level of hockey, their number one attribute, in my opinion, is they are coachable. If they're not coachable, you got a problem. They're going to peak. They're going to peak.
Yeah.
So again, I don't mean to, hope I answered your question effectively.
I think physics only goes so far. I mean, you said it's the peak performers. It's the pros versus the amateurs. There's one thing that takes us that step further. It's between our ears. It's all about your perceptions, all about your thoughts, all about how we manage our emotions, all about the drive that we all have. So you've gone through such a journey with, you found the time freedom. You realized that it was time is the most important thing that we can all have. And I think an awful lot of entrepreneurs that we speak to, it's time freedom, it's financial freedom, it's time freedom, it's to do what I want to do. And then that naturally leads to passion. Let me do what I'm passionate about. Once I have the time, once I have the money, then I can do what I'm passionate about. And we're passionate about getting people to do their passion projects before that time that never comes.
It's interesting, Mark, that you bring it up in that fashion. I'll basically add to that 100% in support of your thoughts. And that is, I was challenged 10 years ago to figure out, I'll just use the terminology, something it's you need to find out what you are excellent at, effective at, but more importantly, you have passion for. Mm-hmm. And I found that pretty early. I mean, I started quote unquote selling mutual funds when I was 25 years old. Took me a bit to get going, but if people in the world, we're trying to educate people through, you're in the States, you know, you go to University of Michigan, you go to West University here in London, you are educated to do a job. It's great. There's, don't get me wrong. It's for the average person, but I learned something about my cognitive strengths, meaning what am I good at without even trying? Mm-hmm. And so for me, that is, you know, providing for people, communicating with people, and planning ahead for people. So Mark, to your point, if you need to have an education. Income rarely outpaces education. In fact, I would say never. However, man, will we be an effective economy, especially now that everything is online and available to be done with very low overhead. And I would also add to that, you know, a point that you've taught me about, and that's important, and that is, does a relationship, a career, does it serve you? Mm-hmm. Right? Because serving you a paycheck will never get you free.
Mm-hmm.
It won't get you free. It'll get you as free as your coworker who makes the same paycheck.
Yeah.
However, it will serve you if you can manage your time, resources, and energy efficiently. And the only way you will actually stop, in my opinion, and pause what you're doing in terms of being busy, the only way you'll stop and reevaluate your day-to-day to make that shift is if you can identify very clearly what you are good at, Mark, to bail on your first point. So it, and that takes some, I don't want to, marbles. It takes a marble to step back for a second.
Some ovaries.
Yeah. Right. It takes a second to step back and say, well, wait a sec here. You know, what do I like about this? And I've always been kind of a self-evaluator, but once you hit that, that is definitely, in my opinion, especially that takes you to becoming a pro, right? Period. In whatever you're doing. And a pro is, so I actually went to a concert this summer. I made you guys aware of it. It was up in the north, kind of just a country concert with country people. And the kid said to me, I got on the bus with this kid, obviously athletic fella. And he said, I played hockey with Shane Wright, was a top pick this year in the draft. And he said, but you know what? Shane Wright's at the Seattle Kraken camp, and I'm at Music in the Field with you. So obviously he recognized, right, that it was. And there's luck and there's injuries and there's tens of factors. But that reevaluation, and I think it is, and I've struggled with this during the pandemic, I'll be totally truthful with you, but the better you can surround yourself with the people heading in the same direction as you are, not a different direction, or in worst case scenario, in the opposite direction,
right.
You got to make sure that those, you got to cultivate your relationships. It's very important.
And we've gone full circle. It's about cultivating. Yeah. We're all in this harvesting the money, the finance, the time, and the relationships back to your point, to serve you, the relationship that serves you, the business that serves you, the passion projects that you know light you up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's what it's all about. So I was going to ask, the final question was going to be any advice for people coming through. I think you just nailed it out of the park right there. It's a beautiful way to frame what to look for and people coming through, what they can do. That bolted on with the confidence and the belief in the actions, the things that they are good at,
mm-hmm.
are going to serve everyone well.
The last, Mark, can you just quickly repeat your punchline from that statement or question? I have a formulated thought. I don't want to mess it up. What was your specific statement again? You want me to recap everything? No problem.
No idea. I thought it was fascinating as I started off with the harvesting and the farming of money and then time and then relationships, cultivating.
Yeah, I got it. Thank you. I will add the following comment. Thank you for the opportunity to do so. In the program that you offer, I have come 900 feet forward. And this was something that nearly crushed me during the pandemic. Is, Katie, you asked about that shift from labor and physicality and productivity to a completely emotional and mental career.
Yeah.
And the pandemic, all of what I had, which was a little bit of tangibility, like I went and combined oats in 2021,
right,
to just go and operate something. And I recognized, like, I was riding a bike, I don't know, 2,000, whatever that is, 1,500 miles in a couple of months. And what I was reaching for was that ability to feel physically productive. You couldn't play hockey. You couldn't play sports. You couldn't see people. You couldn't go out and hang out with some friends. You could golf a little bit.
Yeah.
May or may not have been involved in a golf course that was illegally open. Can't comment for sure. But Mark, the end game and what I've learned in the Unforget Yourself program is that the final piece of the puzzle for me is around something called an intentional pause. And when you're farming, as Mark said, you plant your seed. I know that 120 days I've got corn or whatever crop. And I lost touch of that completely because nobody's smiling at you. Nobody's hugging you. Nobody. I went on a date with a woman and gave her a hug. And I'm sure she was like, what in the hell is this? Right?
Or she was like, hey.
Yeah, that's it. But it was just about me communicating to her.
Yeah.
You know what? I had a really good time.
Yeah.
You may not, but that's what was lost for me in the pandemic. And I bring it to your attention, Mark, because when it comes to that stuff, in terms of your tangibility. I will openly admit that I lost sight of it because all that stuff went away, you know, temporarily. But so the intentional pause is something that I still struggle with today. Like I'll go downstairs if I'm feeling anxious or nervous. You know, Mark, you spoke to me early on about cortisol and how that affects your overall picture and body. And I know I didn't get a workout until today, till 12 o'clock. I started trying some fasting recently. Like I'm a big dude. I'm a larger gentleman. So I don't need to lose a bunch of weight, but I do exercise to release some endorphins and to work on my cortisol. So the trouble is, you know, you got to be able to make sure that you're pausing at the right time, especially now, because for me, everything went digital. So we got Zoom, text, FaceTime, but it's all pretty well instantaneous. So Katie, COVID hit a massive hot button for me, which is what you asked about earlier with the farming transition, is that I'm talking to two people from Michigan. I met one of them in person. He's exactly what I thought, but meeting him in person is like, I don't do drugs, but it's like a dose of cocaine because it's like, A, he is not a cartoon character. He's real. Right. B, he sounds like he sounds on Zoom. And C, you know, you could pick up a little bit of nonverbals from screens and whatnot, but it's not. Humans are social and communicative creatures. So I went to a hockey game a couple weeks ago for a lady I got to know a little bit, and her son was like, he's struggling. And I said to her, I was like, his body language is terrible. You can see it, right? And he's got all kinds of skill. He's struggling between his ears. And I bring it up because I am hypersensitive to that fact that he's simply in his own head, right? Mm. Now, I didn't tell her that mom should uncross her arms while he's playing because he's doing it. I didn't bring that up. But that's... like that was gone for me for a long time. And I was already trained myself to read nonverbal communication. So I pick it up, I'm sure at some kind of incredibly creepy level, because it's just like, boom, boom, boom. You just pay attention because you're starving for it, right? So that was the pandemic to me. And that's really what, you know, I'll give you guys full compliment on that. That's what Unforget Yourself has taught me, or maybe realign for me, is that it's not gone forever. It was gone and it's starting to return. But
thank God.
That was Katie, no, that was a button for me, because I'm used to, you know, working on equipment or, you know, so then when I got away from that in my career, that's fine. But then when it stopped, it's like, okay, I need to find an outlet here that's either touch or, you know what I mean? So it's a hard thing to explain, but that took a button at COVID that was maybe out of a 2 out of 3 fulfillment, and took that down to a -4 for me because it was gone.
Right.
So just a thought, and it's been a good value from your program.
Oh, thank you, Jerry, for sharing that. Well, and I can see the thread throughout everything, how you're able to get to these bits because of the sort of innate ability to look deeper into the inner workings of everything. And it seems like what you've come down to is it's understanding that it is how you show up over and over and over and over again.
You got to hit singles, not home runs. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. More singles you're going to hit, right? And so, like, for me, I look at a sport like hockey, you got to be able to skate. And skating is about having enough of a foundational development of your skating skills. I can go play beer league with the fellows here and be fine, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I could probably go one group lower for age and speed. But outside of that, you know, I didn't play for a number of years, right? So, but any kid, you know, when you talk about that psychological gap, that gets closed, in my opinion, from the time they're 12 to about 16 in their ability to skate, right? As one example of really pulling that out and putting that on the table, that's important. So,
yeah, it's so fascinating. Well, Jerry, you've shared such an interesting thread amongst all these topics for us. And it's just been a pleasure diving into this with you in a way we've never actually gotten to.
Yeah, I find out absolutely more about you than we didn't know about. It links in beautifully. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, no pleasure, part of it. It's also very helpful to express it. So thanks very much for having me, and wish you all the well with the podcast.
Thanks. Well, we'll follow it up again. We can have conversations with Jerry.
I make a great repeat guest, I'm sure, for about 3 times, and that's about enough.
I was about to say conversations and cocktails with Jerry.
Yes,
there you go.
That's better.
That's how it's done.
Yeah, screw the coffee. We go right to cocktails. Nice. Oh, okay. Well, if anybody wants to learn like more about you, we know you have an Instagram page. Is there any place you want to direct people to, or do you pick out who you want to work with?
Yeah, no, I'm very selective. Thank you for asking. However, it's a great question. I am, even after all this COVID time, a little bit late in getting going in developing some podcast material of my own. Thanks for asking. I can't even find the my link. I'll have to maybe add it to you after the fact, because I'm just new to the podcast world, but it was what got me through the pandemic, right? That consistency of listening to podcasts. So I am available, but at this point, yeah, I'm very selective in who I have those opening conversations with. So maybe in the future, in our second episode, I can happily share with you how my social platform rolls out. It's nothing I've done historically, because most of my stuff is referral based, but I know to expand into your country and to expand into that upper level of individuals, I'm already there, but just it happens that in the US, affluence in that country is, you know, you might have 5 McDonald's restaurants here, you might have 100 in the States, right? So it's a different scale. So I'll keep that on the down low for now, but at some point I'd like to add it to the list of opportunities for connecting with me, because a conversation I find is rarely wasted. So, thanks for the opportunity.
Good. You're welcome. Okay. Well, bye for now, everybody.
Hey, Katie.
Yeah, Mark.
Want to do an outro?
I sure do.
Sweet. Hey, thank you so much for listening and making it to the end.
Yay, you.
So what happens next?
We ask them the things that podcasters are supposed to ask at the end of an episode.
Can you please rate, review, download?
Subscribe.
Mm.
Yeah.
But why is it important?
Because that's how our podcast gets noticed.
It's how people find us.
It is. And we want all their earballs.
All the earballs all over the place.
We do.
Nice.
Yeah. So please do all those things. We'll be ever so grateful.
And then more people hear your beautiful voice.
Or yours.
See you next time.
Bye.